These past few weeks, you know, I was at Kevin's ordination. I had my anniversary of my ordination last weekend. So I've been thinking back a little bit about, you know, when I entered the seminary. And it's more than 20 years ago now. So, like, that's a long ways away. And when I was first thinking about going into the seminary, I went and talked with Father Bob Harris, who was then the vocation director. Father Bob Harris is later on became a bishop, and now he's retired. That's how long ago this is. It's like everybody's retired in this story but me. But anyway, but I went to see Father Bob, and I started, you know, asking him about a whole bunch of questions because I had no clue as to how the seminary worked. And I asked, well, you know, how long does it take to become a priest? Can I take these classes at night or something like this while I'm still working? Can I stay in my apartment and commute to school? Is that how it works like university did? Or like, how does this work? And I had no clue what was involved. All I knew is that I felt that the Lord was calling me to this, but I had no idea of the particulars. And I remember Father Bob looking at me like I was just like a complete dope. Huh? No, you can't stay in your own apartment and commute. No, you can't keep your job and do this. This is a full-time gig. You know, and he says, this isn't something you just, oh, well, maybe I'll give it a little try and, you know, take some classes at night. No. He patiently explained to this dope that entering the seminary was not a part-time thing. I'd have to give up my job. I'd have to give up my apartment, the lease on my car, all of that in order to commit myself fully and full-time to being a seminarian. And he explained to me that, although I didn't get it at the time, that discipleship requires a commitment. And I was like, yeah, I get it. I said, but you have to understand, you know, I have an apartment I have a few years left on my car lease and all of that sort of stuff. I have a job that pays pretty well. And he smiled and he just said, uh-huh. Well, try talking to your landlord. Maybe he'll let you out of the lease. Same thing with the car. And well, you know, at work, have you talked to them about a sabbatical or a leave of absence? And so I did. I went and talked to my landlord, and he was actually really happy to see me enter the seminary. So he gladly was going to let me leave whenever I wanted to. As for the car lease, well, at just the right time, one of my buddies, his cousin, was looking for that type of car, and so he took over the lease. And as far as the job went, well, they weren't too open to me taking a leave of absence. I'd just started like 6 months before at this job, so they weren't too keen on me doing a leave of absence. But I knew this wasn't a job I wanted to spend my life doing anyway. But, you know, it turns out it wasn't really material or practical things that were holding me back from entering the seminary. The thing that was actually holding me back was fear. And for me, this may not be for you, but for me, my brand of fear is fear of failure. That's the thing I'm most afraid of, is failing. For you, it might be something else. And so I kept, you know, I'd ask myself, what if I try and I fail? What then? What do I do at that point? What if I fail after I've told my family and friends that I'm going to do this? What if I discover it's not what God is calling me to? What if the bishop decides that I'm not what he wants for a priest? What will I say to people, if I fail at this, how will it change my sense of self-worth if I fail at this? If I think God is calling me to this and I fail at it? All these fears were swirling around in my head. And it wasn't easy, and it took actually a year of prayer and discernment to try and figure out that it was actually this particular fear that was holding me back before I was finally willing to enter the seminary and able to. And to this day, it's an ongoing process of learning to trust God more and let go of my fears. It's an ongoing process of learning more and more to put the Lord at the center of my life. As I've said before, God's hopes and dreams for us are way bigger and more wonderful than our own. But for me, it's an ongoing process of letting go of the fear that I might not live up to the hopes and dreams that I think God has for me. Most of us have things that hold us back from trusting God fully. Things that we think prevent us from putting God first and truly following Jesus. In the gospel today, Jesus is talking about the commitment that's required to follow him, to truly put him at the center of our life. The gospel talks about people giving all kinds of excuses for not following Jesus right there and then, for putting it off, saying, I'll do it, but some other day, not right now. And Jesus knows their hearts. He knows the excuses they're giving are just that, excuses. And that it's actually fear that's holding them back. Fear of commitment, and that's a big one that we see all over the place today. Fear of failing, fear of what others might think, fear of the unknown, fear of losing something in the process. And I'm probably forgetting a whole bunch of types of fears that people have that hold them back from really fulfilling their own dreams, their own, you know, hopes and dreams, let alone the God-sized hopes and dreams that the Lord has for them. It's that fear that Jesus knows can be paralyzing. It can prevent people from doing what they know is right, what they know is the just thing to do in a certain situation. Fear can prevent people and be from ever doing the right thing when it comes to very difficult situations. That fear can prevent paralyzing, and it can prevent us from not only committing to something good, but it can prevent us from acting at all. I've told this story before, but I think it's a good illustration. You know, my mother mother passed away, God rest her soul, but my mother was deathly afraid of snakes. I mean, deathly afraid of them. And I remember one time she was going up to the cottage and I called her later on that afternoon. She was going up on a Friday, and she's going up and I call and there's no answer. Okay. Call back a little bit later, still no answer. Call back a third time. And I finally get her and I said, oh, well, you caught in traffic. Did you stop off for groceries? And she goes, no, there was a snake in the driveway. I said, what do you mean there was a snake in the driveway? She said, there was a little snake. I said, Mom, it's a garter snake, big deal. You know, you walk around it. And she's like, no, I got out of the car. I saw the snake. My mother didn't jump anywhere, but she should have got back into the car and locked the door. She actually locked the door because of the snake. And she waited an hour and a half. And I said, well, what'd you do? Well, I just waited there in the car with the doors locked. I said, well, you didn't run over it? You didn't drive away? You didn't, And she goes, no, I was just racked with fear. I just sat there. And then an hour and a half later, I finally got the courage to open up the door and the snake was gone. And then so she went into the house. She was paralyzed with fear, and it prevented her from actually doing something she'd been looking forward to all week, going to the cottage for the weekend. Over and over in the Bible, God says, be not afraid. Over and over in the Gospels, Jesus tells his disciples, be not afraid. Peter sees Jesus walk on water and is able to go out and walk on water himself until he starts to be afraid. I read a book a few years ago about the priesthood, and it was called The Lost Art of Walking on Water. But I think it applies to all those who make the decision to follow Jesus. In it, the author says that, you know, that he believes that every single one of us is called to greatness in some way. That we're created for awesome and wonderful things. And maybe on a large scale, maybe those things are a little bit more quiet, they're a little smaller. But we are called to heroism and even to things that might actually seem miraculous. But he says, however, fear so often prevents us from actually believing we're capable of it. But guess what? You and I are not capable of it, not on our own at least. But trusting in the Lord, we can overcome seemingly impossible situations, he says. We can walk on water. One of my favorite quotes from Pope Francis is something he said. One time he said, the Lord does not work miracles in those who consider themselves righteous, but in those who know themselves to be needy. He is not attracted by our goodness, he says. That is not why he loves us. God loves us just as we are. We can walk on water. That relationship in your life with a parent, a child, a spouse, a sibling that seems irreparably broken, it can be mended. It may take a courage or a fearlessness to take the first step that you don't think you have. It may seem impossible to forgive, or may seem impossible to ask for forgiveness, but it can be done. In your workplace, it may take boldness to step up and fix a toxic work environment. It may even require the courage to ultimately leave a job that makes you miserable and seemingly start all over, but it can be done. It may take way more guts than we think we have to step out and actually walk on water. To talk to that sibling, that parent, that boss, that colleague, to address what has always gone unaddressed, to step up and say the things that you've been afraid to, that you've been avoiding, that both of you have been avoiding. It can be done. I've had to do it in my life. I've had to pray about it an awful lot when I've had to do it. And sometimes it doesn't even go that well. It doesn't go as well as I imagine it's going to go in my head, because I get all wrapped up in the emotions of this. But it can be done. And the Lord wants you to step out and do what is seemingly impossible to you. Walking on water starts with letting go of the fear that holds us back and deciding to trust Jesus. As I've said before, believing in Jesus is one thing. Believing Jesus, when he tells us to be not afraid and calls us to walk on water, that's another thing altogether. For me, entering the seminary required that I let go of fear. But I first had to pray to ask what it was that I was really afraid of. I was making excuses, not addressing the real underlying issue, my fear. I needed God to reveal to me what it was that I was actually afraid of. The fear of failing. That's what was holding me back. And once I knew what was holding me back, I could work on letting go of that fear, of surrendering it. Make no mistake, Jesus is calling you to walk on water, to do something great. He may be calling you to serve in the church in some way, serve your family in some way, serve the poor or marginalized in some way, or even to in the work you're already doing. But we all find excuses. Oh, I don't have the time. I don't have the skills. I wouldn't do a good job at that. I'd botch it up. I just need to do this first, to get this part of my life in order. Then I can address the big thing. They're excuses. Ask the Lord to show you what is really holding you back, where your real fear lies. You need to know what this is first before you can let go of that fear. And you may have already said yes to following him and putting him at the center of your life, and that's wonderful. But I bet there's a part of you that you're still afraid to give over to him, a part of your life that where you don't fully trust God. Jesus is asking you to let go of that fear, to commit yourself fully to him. I guarantee you, you will not be disappointed if you do. St. Paul today says, "Brothers and sisters, for freedom Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to a yoke of slavery." Well, I say that yoke of slavery is a yoke of fear. What fear does Christ want to set you free from? And what's the next awesome, even miraculous thing he is calling you to do with that freedom?